from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is the local edition. And I'm Jason Dole. I want to thank you so much for being here with me this evening. We've got a lot of news to get to in the next half hour here. News from our region in New York State from the Times Union at timesunion.com. For that, we turn to the Times Union's Hudson Valley Chief, Philip Pantuso, joining us once again here. Philip, welcome back to the Local Edition, and also, you know, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Good to be back.
The first time that we're talking here in the new year, and we do have a lot of news to get to, but let's start off with some bad news that there was a fatal accident, and a woman from Woodridge has been charged with vehicular manslaughter. This is something that just happened this past weekend. Do you want to let folks know what this was?
Yeah, so this was at about 1 a.m. on Sunday in Thompson on Glen Wild Road near its intersection with Pine Tree Road. A pedestrian there was struck and died. The woman who died, her name was Vanessa Hopper. She was a 29-year-old from Liberty. A couple days later, state police announced that the driver of the vehicle who struck her had been charged, as you said, with vehicular manslaughter. That was a Woodridge woman, kind of a tongue twister, named Sadia Thomas, 31 years old. She was charged with not only vehicular manslaughter, but also driving while impaired, and was arraigned and remanded to Sullivan County Jail. Her next court appearance is scheduled for January 23rd. And one other quick note about this, the state police are still investigating the incident in case there's anything else that they need to know, essentially. And of course, because there's going to be now a criminal prosecution here. So they are encouraging anybody who may have witnessed this or who knows either the parties involved or has any other information to reach out to the State Police Bureau of Criminal Investigation at the Wardsboro Barracks. That number is 845-344-5300.
Yeah, and when things are still under investigation, that's when you tend not to get as many details from law enforcement as you might like as a reporter.
Yeah, that's right. That's why this is a pretty short story.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing us that news, and sorry to hear about it. If there are any updates, I know that you'll be bringing those to us as well. Now I want to turn focus on the Albany legislative things that are happening, but I'll just preview all of this by reminding the listener that we're going to be hearing a lot about what's going on in Albany in the coming weeks, because coming up next week on Tuesday, we've got the State of the State address. That's when the Governor Hochul lays out her vision for New York State. It's also kind of the kickoff of the budgeting process in Albany, which the budget process defines legislation to a large degree for the coming year. So all of that is on the horizon, and we will be bringing people that State of the State address live here Tuesday afternoon, starting, I think, at 1 o'clock. All of that to say that on top of all that Albany news, yesterday was the first day the lawmakers returned to Albany, right, Philip?
Yeah, that's right. And, at this point, the session is usually, about 6 months. Most of what gets passed happens toward the end of that, and then bills will sit around for a while. So I say that just as a caveat to say that some of what was discussed yesterday that I'll mention here is probably a long way away from happening. But you can start to take the temperature of what is on lawmakers' minds this year. And it seems like for both parties, the top issue is going to be cost of living. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie mentioned a couple of, pretty interesting proposals that at this point are short on details, but would have a direct impact on people's pocketbooks. He said that the state should eliminate state income taxes for low-income families, probably for people at or below the federal poverty line. And he also pitched something that would be a big win for local businesses, a full repayment of the $6 billion currently owed in unemployment insurance debt by the state from the pandemic. So right now, individual businesses are paying that back slowly. Hasty said that the state must find a way to eliminate the money owed to reduce the burden on small businesses. I have no idea how that's going to happen, but it seems like that's something he is interested in working on. And again, you know, politicians from both sides of the aisle talked about cost of living issues, including Assembly Minority Leader Will Barkley. He said it needs to be the goal of every member of the legislature to lower that cost. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's something that we see a lot of action on, since things do tend to move a little faster when there's bipartisan consensus. And then, of course, the other kind of main takeaway, I think, from the first day was, let's call it federal proofing, some policies in New York that may come under new threat under a second Trump administration. So there was a lot of discussion basically about things that New York could do at the state level to try to fend off actions that the Trump administration might take, or really more specifically, kind of rollbacks on things that Democratic federal administrations have put into place. Of particular concern for a lot of Democrats, especially, was Trump's campaign promise to dramatically increase deportations of immigrants into this country who have entered illegally. Advocates for immigrants were at the Capitol on Wednesday to call on lawmakers to approve legislation that they said would help them avoid deportation, including guaranteeing them a right to legal representation that would be paid by the state during immigration proceedings. And, you know, there's a lot of other things that that lawmakers are going to be looking at with regards to climate initiatives. But, you know, it's a long session and lots of details to still be hammered out there.
Yeah, I'm wondering, did you hear from anyone or has the Times Union done any reporting on this that it comments on the politics of this moment? Because you basically told us two things there. One is, you know, there's this focus on affordability, you know, cost of living, and now also getting ready, that federal proofing that you mentioned. In some ways, the common thread there between both those stories is a Democratic-led state legislature in a Democratic-led state reacting to Republican power and the momentum that got them to this power now.
Yeah. You know, Democrats certainly, since the elections in November, have been speaking with a bit more urgency. You know, the makeup of the legislature, both chambers, it didn't really change. There are 213 members total in the legislature. It's about two-thirds Democrats, but there's a lot of sort of factionalism within the Democrats. I think what we'll see in people, especially within the Democratic Party, have been so far saying this. I think we'll see a lot more consensus and agreement on things within the Democratic Party. You'll probably see, you know, for example, I think under the Biden administration, you had the progressive wing of the party really try to push forward proposals and use their voting power, which Democrats needed for kind of more meat and potatoes issues, as leverage to try to get more progressive things, at least get them an airing on the floor. I'd expect that there will be a little less of that, at least in the first couple years of the Trump administration, while that administration will have full, unified power of both the House and Senate on the federal level. There's also, conversely, while every county except for, I think, one in New York moved to the right in the 2024 election, most of the Republicans, or certainly a decent chunk of the Republicans in the state legislature, aren't what you'd exactly call like dyed-in-the-wool MAGA Republicans. I think that there might be a few who would, for example, not want to undo programs that are working on the state level for their constituents, but that might come under threat from federal legislation. So I think you'll see a little bit more compromise both within the Democratic Party and probably across the aisle on things that they can agree on.
And while I've got you sidetracked into giving a little bit of analysis more so than straight reporting, you know, I'm not going to be able to talk to you again. We're going to, next time I talk to you, it'll be after Governor Hochul gives her State of the State address. And I just wonder, as someone who's reporting the news and, you know, heading off the Hudson Valley Bureau and have an eye on this region, what, if anything, are you looking for in the governor's speech on Tuesday?
That's a really interesting question. You know, there are a couple of things she's already, a couple of policy initiatives she started to dribble out, which I can talk about here in a moment. In terms of like what I'm looking for, you know, Hochul so far in her tenure as governor has not really shown much ability to wield a big stick, for lack of a better term. Like, she has put forth fairly ambitious policy proposals. And even the ones that aren't super ambitious, but are clearly important to her. You know, I think one that meets both of those criteria from a couple of years ago was her housing compact, you know, to build something like 10,000 new units of housing, in New York. She hasn't really shown much ability to actually generate the kind of political consensus needed to get her agenda taken care of. So I will be curious to see, if she is a little bit less ambitious in this year's State of the State. And I'll be curious to see if she's signaling at maybe new alliances and maybe a new willingness among her partner lawmakers in the legislature to kind of unify and come together in order to get more policies passed. There has been, you know, I think this is in the story that Dan Clark, one of our Capitol correspondents, wrote about the legislature's first day. But there is, you know, while the makeup of state governance hasn't really changed, obviously the stakes are a lot higher after the country and voters in New York sent a clear message in November that their patience has run out for government to address a number of issues, you know, higher costs, lack of housing, lack of progress, perhaps on climate change, which I know is top of mind for a lot of people, with the fires in Los Angeles this week. So yeah, I will be kind of looking to see what area she chooses to prioritize as those that, you know, she and other Democrats and maybe even whatever Republicans they can bring over can deliver on this year, because it's been a couple of years of them not really being able, her specifically not really being able to deliver on sort of big policy initiatives. And that has, you know, I think that really cost a lot of Democrats in the November elections, and it could cost her because she's going to face a pretty strong challenge, I'm sure, from a Republican when New York elects its next governor.
Yep, that was all I was planning on adding to what you just said. And there's a 2026 gubernatorial election looming beyond all of this, which probably is on the governor's mind a little bit.
You would think.
I'm talking with Philip Pantuso. We've got more news to get to, and more news specifically as Governor Hochul is gearing up for the State of the State address. Some issues being floated, including universal child care and expanded rail service to the Hudson Valley. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, those stories and more with Philip Pantuso. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You look at a map of the fires and you see them kind of dotting all around our city. Feels a bit like a ring of fire, which is kind of terrifying. And the fact that they are sort of encroaching more on the city of Los Angeles makes it feel like this is one of the most major events that people here have ever experienced.
I'm Natalie Kitroeff. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is John A. Powell. He'll talk to Courtney Martin about his new book, The Power of Bridging. It's a guide to fostering connections in today's fragmented society. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. I'm talking to Philip Pantuso from Times Union Hudson Valley Bureau. And Philip, bringing it back to Governor Hochul one more time, and big ideas that perhaps we're looking for her ahead to unveil in her State of the State. She's talking about universal access to child care in New York State.
Yeah. So at an event in Brooklyn on Tuesday, she said, quote, "We need to get there," with regards to universal child care. And so what she said the state is going to do, it's going to put together a coalition of business leaders, providers, fiscal experts, et cetera, who are going to meet and identify strategies that the state can take in coming years to provide universal child care. That's, you know, a problem really all across the United States, and something that states are having to tackle sort of on the state by state level, because there is very little action on it on the federal level. I should note that New York has made some improvements on this front in recent years. Hochul said in this same event on Tuesday that she plans to propose that $110 million be set aside in this year's state budget to build new child care facilities and to maintain and improve ones that are already built. She noted that she hears from a lot of families that there's a shortage of facilities. That funding is going to be targeted toward areas that have the largest shortage of providers, including Central New York and the North Country. And that's going to be on top of a couple of other improvements that came into play last year. Last year, the state began to offer $50 million in tax credits for employers that build child care centers on site or contract with a child care provider that offers the services to employees. And they set aside another $50 million for construction of child care centers. And the 110 that Hochul proposed on Tuesday and that she's going to lay out in her state address would add to that. So essentially it would create a pot of $160 million between last year's budget and in this year's to build and improve child care centers across the state.
Okay, great. And really, there's this thread kind of running through a lot of these stories, is the governor in New York is also kind of telegraphing some additional stuff that's going to be in her State of the State address next week. And that might include improvements to Hudson Valley train service.
Yes, this is another sort of policy that she previewed this week. She is proposing a series of improvements basically to state-funded train services, which would include the Metro-North Railroad and certain Amtrak lines. These would mostly be infrastructure updates, you know, replacing old signals, streamlining rail service, making a few kind of climate resilient changes to more vulnerable segments of particularly the Hudson line, which is the one that runs up along the Hudson River up to Poughkeepsie. She said that these would cut travel times on Metro North by about 15 minutes each way. And she would also add what she called a super express train on Metro North that would shorten the trip from Poughkeepsie to New York City or vice versa to under 90 minutes. Right now, I think it's about 2 hours. So that would be pretty, you know, that would be very welcome, I think, to a lot of commuters. But I think this would probably benefit people who don't just commute as well. Part of this plan would also open the door to shuttle bus service from the Port Jervis line, which kind of goes through southern Orange County to some popular areas in the county, including Storm King, Stewart Airport, Legoland, and Woodbury Commons. And, you know, the proposal calls for or tasks the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, which operates the commuter railroads, including and also the subway, of course, to put funding from its capital plan toward evaluating and designing these improvements. And they should have that funding because of another policy that we've talked about a lot went into effect this weekend, which is the congestion toll pricing into Manhattan. You know, it went in at a slightly lower number, but it's still expected to raise quite a lot of money. And so there should be some money there within MTA coffers to improve or to make some of these infrastructure improvements that the governor's calling for.
Right. And I'll just remind the listener, they might have caught in there that reference to the Port Jervis line, which is, I think, a lot of folks in our listening area, if they're familiar with train transportation to the city, they're more familiar with the Port Jervis line than the Hudson line. But that's interesting that they're talking about shuttle bus service that could potentially connect those two lines.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, keep an eye on that and let us know. It seems like people around the country are looking at ways to increase train usage. Another thing that's in the background of all of this, too, is New York's climate change goals. So this story in some ways isn't too far removed also from things such as congestion pricing, because these stories all do overlap. I'm just reminding the listener about all of that a little bit. Next up, talking about New York and legislation, you've got a story on new legislation about the state health department reviewing traumatic brain injury care.
Yeah, so this is a bill that passed last year, but that was signed into law last week by the governor. It was carried for a couple of years, actually, by State Senator Michelle Hinchey, who represents Saugerties and a big swath of the sort of like middle northern Catskills. And essentially, it will direct what's called the Traumatic Brain Injury Services Coordinating Council, which is just an advisory body to the state health department, to conduct a statewide review of brain injury care. So that will include assessing the availability and accessibility of services, regional disparities, emerging trends, differences in services and outcomes for New Yorkers served by various programs, and the efficiency of service administration. And the backdrop to why this is needed is that, frankly, New York has some of the worst care for people who have survived and are living with traumatic brain injuries of any state in the U.S. I did a big story about 18 months ago about the family whose plight inspired this bill. It was they're called the Berrians. They live in Ulster County. The daughter, 16 years old at the time in 2014, she was hit by a distracted driver and suffered a traumatic brain injury that she's had to live with, you know, for 10 and a half years since then, that have caused her, you know, profound difficulties with language, with movement, with taking care of herself. And her mother, whose name is Catherine Berrian, has waged this, frankly, sort of Herculean fight with the Department of Health and the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities to get the adequate care that her daughter needs. And really what their story reveals is that, you know, New York just doesn't really have adequate care and facilities, especially for youth living with traumatic brain injuries. Oftentimes, they will put them in sort of restrictive institutional settings rather than community-based housing, or they'll put them in programs or care settings that are for different kinds of developmental disabilities. You know, traumatic brain injuries is a very specific type of disability because it's something it's a trauma. It's something you sustain. You're not born with it. And so your body and your mind hasn't learned how to compensate exactly. And so it takes specific care. It takes specific rehab, specific treatment. And that's just really not available in too many places, particularly in upstate New York, and particularly for people under the age of 21 whose brains are still developing. Oftentimes what happens, and this has happened with Hannah, is if the state doesn't send them to one of the facilities I mentioned earlier, they'll send them out of state. So Senator Hinchey and other care advocates I spoke with noted that this legislation that the governor signed last week is really just a first step toward giving the state a fuller understanding of traumatic brain injury care in New York, so that legislators can ask for more funding, programs, and or different regulations to better serve residents, so that maybe we don't have to send them out of state. So good news, but you know, just a first step.
Finally, tonight, you've got a story about a luxury hotel that opened up in the region, but it got sued a whole bunch. How did that shake out?
Yeah, this has been a pretty popular story on our site this week. Probably a lot of outrage traffic to it. In late 22, a hotel outside of Rhinebeck called Habitas on Hudson opened up. It was the first U.S. hotel from this international luxury hospitality brand called Habitas, which mostly owns other luxury hotels and kind of upscale glamping sites in places like Morocco and Mexico and Saudi Arabia. It got a ton of coverage at the time, a lot of national coverage, a lot of international coverage even. But it appears to have closed, and it may have been closed for about a year or so at this point. They didn't answer any questions, so we don't know precisely why, but I would guess it's related to a series of lawsuits that it faced beginning in late 2023 and then throughout 2024. Most of these have to do with its failure to make basic payments. So the hotel proprietor was technically renting the property from an LLC comprising a few different property developers and owners. They allege that the hotel essentially stopped making its rent payments. The hotel was also sued twice by the commissioners of the state insurance fund and by the state workers' compensation board for failing to pay workers' compensation and disability benefits. Worth noting that the hotel group lost all of these lawsuits, mostly in summary judgments, because it failed to show up for its court dates. So I'm going to guess that that's why it's closed down right now. And I'm also not holding my breath that they're going to get back to us in response to our questions.
Okay, well, thank you for that. And all the news that you brought to us, Philip, that's all the time that we've got for today. But I want to thank you again for being here and remind folks that these stories that we talked about are up now at timesunion.com. Philip, have a great week till we talk again.
You too. Take care.
That's all the time that we have for the Local Edition tonight. Big thanks once again to Philip Pantuso. Thank you for being here with me and listening. I'm Jason Dole. I will be back here on Monday for the next Local Edition that I host. But Local Edition comes back tomorrow evening at 6. Patricio Robayo will be your host. And tomorrow morning at 10, local news continues on Radio Chatskill with Tim Bruno. Don't miss any of the news that we produce. Check out everything that we've got available to you at our website, wjffradio.org. The latest news at wjffradio.org. Ramble Tamble's coming up at 7, but we've got more news next from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Never Sink General Store, featuring deli sandwiches, gourmet specials, and catering. TheNeverSinkGeneralStore.com. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate